I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Glad to have you here. A lot to get to today, including a hopeful story from Pakistan about a young woman who was forced into marriage as a child, but still fought to finish her education.
If I think back now, I really wonder, how did I do it? Maybe I didn't know that it was hard. Nobody told me it's hard, so I just did it, you know?
The latest story in our new Across Women's Lives series is coming up later in the show. We begin, though, with decidedly less hopeful news from Pakistan, that overnight attack on a police academy in the city of Quetta. At least 60 young cadets were killed in the assault. Kathy Gannon is covering the story for the Associated Press from Islamabad.
Well, what happened was three attackers went into this police academy where there were hundreds of police recruits who were unarmed because they're recruits, they're not trained police yet, they're cadets. And it was at night, so they would have been mostly asleep. And three suicide bombers went in. They all had suicide vests and they opened fire. There was a gun battle that lasted for 4 hours. One of them detonated his vest when the army arrived, and a second one went to detonate his vest, but before he could, he was shot, and then the third one was also shot. But that was after 4 hours. Now, we have two different claims of responsibility. One is the Islamic State. The second claim was from a very little-known group, the breakaway faction of the Tehrik-i Taliban called the Hakimullah Group. But most people who are familiar with the militancy here in Pakistan say that it's unlikely that that group would have the ability and organization to carry out such a coordinated and effective attack. But they have made the claim, as has the Islamic State. And again, there is no corroboration for either of those claims.
What does Pakistan's intelligence agency, the ISI, believe? Who do they believe staged this?
The ISI hasn't made the comment, but the army has said that they believe it is Lashkar-e-Jhangvi, which in the past has largely attacked minority Shiite groups. But again, it's still new. The situation, of course, as you could imagine, has been very fluid. So now the investigation really begins in earnest.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary that just three attackers managed to engage this police academy in a firefight.
Well, you're absolutely right. It is very incredible. And the question is how is it that they're able to carry out such a powerful attack and cause so many deaths at a compound, a security force compound, whether it's cadets or whatever, it is still a Pakistan security force compound. And so there's a lot of questions being asked as to how they were able to breach the security, which seems to be relatively minimal because there were only a couple of guards. They shot them and then just came in.
Well, as you said, one of the claims of responsibility came from IS. It's been a couple of years since I first heard about ISIS getting a foothold in Afghanistan. How well established are they right now in Afghanistan and Pakistan?
Well, yes. I think certainly in Afghanistan, they have a little bit more of a foothold. I think it would be a bit of an exaggeration to say they have a heavy-duty presence in both countries, but they certainly have in Afghanistan established themselves in eastern Afghanistan in Nangarhar province, which borders on to Pakistan. And some of Pakistan's tribal areas have not necessarily vowed allegiance to, but certainly indicated support for the Islamic State. But it's still unclear just how extensive their network is and whether it's more just people inspired by, would like to be affiliated with, as opposed to a real strong link with the ISIS or Islamic State in Syria and Iraq.
AP correspondent Kathy Gannon there in Islamabad. Pakistan is battling a number of militant groups, but some say there is another level to the problem.
The Pakistani military has tolerated the existence of certain militant groups that these Pakistani leaders believe can help them in countering India's military.
That's Reuters investigative reporter David Rode. He says the rise of extremists in Pakistan can be traced to the country's tensions with its neighbor and longtime rival, India.
There's a belief in some elements of the Pakistani military that the most effective way that Pakistan can deal with India, and they see India as its primary existential threat, is through militants, is through proxies. And they used that strategy in the 90s, but since 2001, the U.S. has tried to get them to realize you can't really divide militant groups up. There aren't sort of good jihadis and bad jihadis. They all tend to assist each other, but the military continues to pursue this strategy, you know, they see India as a bigger threat to Pakistan's future than these militant groups.
So there are no charges that India is kind of manipulating these extremists, is there?
No, I mean, that circulates as well in sort of conspiracy theories, but there's no question that this form of radical Islam, which, to be fair, the United States first fomented along with Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, this jihadism in the 1980s, at that point to, you know, have young Afghans and Pakistanis kill Soviet soldiers in Afghanistan, it is now out of control. It's a Frankenstein. The U.S. has learned its lesson. There's debate about whether Saudi Arabia has learned its lesson about dealing with jihadis, but it seems that Pakistan's intelligence service still thinks they can control them.
This does seem to be an especially vulnerable moment for Pakistan. Can you tell us why that is?
There's been heightened tensions with India on the border. The army has sort of asserted, you know, tremendous control over the country. The new civilian government is fairly weak. And you do have these different groups almost competing with each other, these different militant groups for attention. And Islamic State has been gaining recruits in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. I was just speaking with an Afghan friend of mine who was in Kabul, and he talked about an attack that was carried out there by Islamic State sympathizers. And he was shocked at how young they were. So the traditional Taliban groups seem to be recruiting effectively among older people, but the Islamic State is making real inroads among young people who are apparently drawn to its even more radical approach.
How do you make sense of this kind of big tangle of different militant groups operating in Pakistan, sometimes working together, sometimes competing?
It's really disturbing, the splintering of these groups, and it makes it much harder for there to be any way to sort of crack down on them. And there tends to be this competition for which group will carry out the most spectacular attack. Pakistan might be trying to negotiate with some of these groups that it's had relationships with in the past in terms of encouraging some militants to battle India, but they're not going to be able to negotiate with all of them or crush all of them if they keep splintering.
Are ISIS and the Taliban actually working in tandem?
I think these groups all work together when it fits their needs. Mm. There's certain areas up in the tribal areas of Pakistan where they all seek shelter, and I think they will help each other there. But they're also opportunistic, and they'll recruit competitively and carry out different attacks.
Some of our listeners will remember that you were kidnapped by members of the Taliban while you were working in Afghanistan in 2008, taken across the border, held in Pakistan. How much have the networks of extremist groups in Pakistan changed since you were in captivity? Or do you think some of the same groups are still working just under different names?
It's my sense that the networks have splintered, that there's many different groups, there's many different Taliban factions, both Afghan Taliban and Pakistani Taliban. You have the Islamic State coming in, and then you have other militant groups that are sectarian, that just want to kill Shia Muslims, and others that just want to attack India. So I think it's gotten worse because there's so much more splintering, so many different groups, and it's that much harder to understand what's driving them or how to counter them.
So finally, David, I know this is a simple question with probably a very complex answer, I know, but what could bring meaningful change to Pakistan to diminish the strength of extremists there?
The most basic thing that could bring change and stability to Pakistan is more of a detente with India, lesser tensions, and then peace in Afghanistan. The Pakistani military is so powerful inside the country because it's able to constantly draw on this sense of insecurity in Pakistan that India is threatening it from the east, and there's also propaganda that India somehow controls the current Afghan government. So they'll back the Taliban, they'll back certain militant groups in the sense that they are saving Pakistan from the threat of India. If those tensions could come down, you would have a much healthier, growing Pakistan.
Reuters investigative reporter David Rode has been following developments in Pakistan. Thank you very much for your time, David.
Thank you.